Hello, welcome to the fourth episode of the Dragon's Pen, podcast about fantasy writing, sci-fi writing, and other genre-specific writing. My name is Martin. I'm a fantasy writer myself, and I have spent years attending and leading workshops, working with aspiring writers to help them understand how to improve their texts. I thought I might share my experience and give you some advice on how to develop your worlds, build your stories and characters, and help you write your own fantasy or sci-fi saga. So, let's get to it. Topic of this episode is, we need more research, Scotty. Obviously, I'm going to talk about research for writing and its importance in the process of writing. It's kind of funny. Research is just like any other aspect of writing. There are people who can't stand it, people who tolerate it, some who just love it. But yet I have never seen or witnessed a heated debate about the importance of research, and I have seen plenty of writing-related fights about feedback, editing, world building, cliche in fantasy or sci-fi. You name it. Saw it, and probably knowing myself, I was part of it. But I have never ever seen the same thing happen when it comes to the topic of research in writing genre-specific literature. People are usually just like, yeah, sure, research can be helpful. And I mean, it kind of makes sense. Compared to any other aspects of genre-specific writing, research is kind of dull. It really is. It's a plain black coffee on a menu full of sparkling lattes with milk from the actual Milky Way. So how can the research help you to write your fantasy or sci-fi novel? I mean, you build a whole world on your own. It is your world. What good does research do for the world in which you can dictate literally everything? Sure, you might have looked through something about mythology, maybe some exotic cultures, stuff like that. That's research, right? And you probably had some questions that needed answering during writing, like, can you safely jump off a cliff overlooking the ocean? Or how much distance can you walk in a day? Stuff like that. But there is actually a little more to doing research than just answering questions that kind of arise during the writing process, and more to it than just kind of resolving logical issues you might encounter. You can utilize research, make it part of your story, and achieve much sought after originality. What many aspiring authors do, what I did when I was working on my earlier stuff, I did a lot of sort of passive research. I accumulated my knowledge mostly just out of sheer interest in certain topics. I was a huge geek, so naturally I took interest in stuff like mythology, the historical living, sword fighting, ancient weaponry, stuff like that. You are listening to the podcast named The Dragon's Pen, so I kind of think you know what I'm talking about. And I'm sure sci-fi writers sort of gravitate towards science-related topics as well. Gravitate. See what I did there? Anyway, this sort of passive research, purely driven by interest, is great, but it does have its limitations. Firstly, let's say with mythology, there are more interesting and popular ones, and lesser known ones, and lesser captivating ones. So naturally, a lot more people are better versed in, let's say, Norse mythology, because it kind of seeps towards them from all over the place, like movies, books, games, comics, wherever. Let's say Zulu mythology might be just as inspiring, but it requires you to actively reach out and, you guessed it, research it. This culminates into two outcomes I usually see with aspiring authors and their early texts. A, lack of originality that stems from researching pretty much the same thing everyone else is. Maybe putting some spin on a topic, but eventually ending up with the same thing as their peers, just in a different shade of black, let's say. Or an outcome B, which is sort of over-reliance on stuff that is very well known to the author. I have seen plenty of that when I was in the fencing community. Yeah, I know, I am a nerd, but I was fencing with at least actual two-handed swords and stuff, not with these flexible, sporty thingies. I mean, you know, I might be a nerd, but I'm not a corrupted aristocrat in a bonvi. The fencing community was full of similar nerds like me. Some of them wrote too, and many of them went really overboard on fighting scenes and swordplay. They could get into so much unnecessary detail in it, it was more of a TED talk than a fantasy story. They simply naturally accumulated so much knowledge about sword fighting, they kind of felt the need to include as much as they could. And you know, because fighting scenes are usually very simplified in literature, that kind of pissed them off, pissed me off too. With this in mind, there was a lot of overcompensating going on. Same would happen when I encountered an author that stumbled upon, let's say, more exotic mythology. They would pack so much of it into their text, they would be better off just making a PowerPoint presentation. Maybe you have done something similar as well. You find something interesting and it kind of overtakes your writing process. So how do you utilize your research better? How can you squeeze inspiration and powerful elements and ideas from research and put it into your text? One thing you might not realize is that research can truly, absolutely elevate your work. It feels kinda counterintuitive, almost weird to say that something like research can elevate your fantasy work. So how does it work? I mean, on one hand, you have creativity, world-building, plot development. On the other half, you have just pure information about, let's say, how much a horse can ride in a day. I mean, how does that help your creative process? Let me give you an example. This time from an actual written, literally, work. I recently finished reading The Martian by Andy Weir, and it is a prime example of how research can form your story and may result in a very inspired and original text. Every single problem that the main character, Mark Watney, encounters while being stranded on Mars is so well researched by the author, it feels almost plausible. I have seen plenty of mission on Mars gone wrong movies and books and games or whatever. It is usually just some unknown killer bacteria or something alien and or something purely sci-fi. But with Martian, it was mostly just a human problem. There was no actual evil antagonist putting the hero in danger. It was just a dust storm. More of a man against nature kind of thing, rather than, you know, this basic sci-fi premise with a killer alien microbe. And Andy Weir very famously did a lot of research and tried to get as realistic as he possibly could with The Martian. Plus, of course, he did wonderful job with character, story and other stuff, but that's not our topic today. Hypothetically, let's forget about every other stuff that went into the process of writing and just concentrate on research aspect of the text. I know it's strange, but let's try. Now imagine The Martian if it was based just on passive research. You know, the one we talked about where you kind of accumulate knowledge just out of pure interest. And okay, so let me think about some things I know about Mars and space exploration. So if I was to write the story about a person stranded on Mars, knowing what I knew before reading The Martian, the main hero would most likely be maybe just a mechanic, not a botanist, because I wouldn't have thought about botanists being useful on Mars mission. And I know something about Mars being smaller than Earth, so probably gravity would be different. And I saw some documentaries, so there was a possibility of terraforming Mars, and you know, all thing about a hill that looks looks like a face from space on a surface. You know, the one that was on X-Files. And putting all this together, it would probably have been a mess. Never, ever would I think about stuff like closing a wrong circuit with jerry-rigged drill and killing off communication by accident. Or a dust storm that would very gradually lessen my solar, you know, power creation. Or the fact that materials, even NASA materials, can just break because they were designed to last only a few months and the main hero is overusing them. How much different of a book it would be if Andy Weir did not actively reach out, interview NASA people, astronauts and engineers. I don't think it would be anywhere near as interesting and captivating as it is now. But you may think, oh, come on, but Andy Weir is a great writer. He could probably make it work, maybe, but what really proves he is a great writer is that he went in a direction of accumulating as much real knowledge as he possibly could. He decided not to wing it with the research, but make the research an integral part of a story, even to the point where without all the research and knowledge and all the interesting stuff from NASA, The Martian would not be Martian, the book we know, and a movie with Matt Damon. Another famous example of this would be Arthur Haley with his airport and hotel novels. He actually spent an entire year researching for each book, even getting a job at the airport, I think, and just so that he could see the inner works of, you know, these places, to look at these not as a customer or a visitor, but as someone on the inside. And this provided him with unique perspective and very unique tools to build his story. All right, but if the research is so damn interesting, why did they both authors did not just make a factual book about that? You know, like let's say a book called What Would the First Martian Eat? A factual look on how the first mission to Mars would truly look. I mean, it would still probably find a decent audience, right? Or something more clickbaity like airport. All the things that could go wrong and kill you on your way back from the vacation. So why didn't they? Well, I think you already know the answer and it's fairly obvious, but think about it for a second. Both of these authors used research to enrich and form their story, not just to kind of support it and not to overwhelm it, but to kind of wove it into the story to the point where it's seamlessly involved. It is very similar to world-building story conflict I talked about in my last episode. The story goes first. Your idea of the story should help you build your world and select the research that would help you, you know, enforce the story. So how do you do that? Okay, so let's say research is a little bit like mining, you know, digging up through tons of useless rock to eventually find something of value. This is another thing that is kind of annoying about research. You can spend hours on it and not come up with a single thing to help your text. You couldn't possibly hope to use every single information you discovered in your writing. I am certain Andy Weir knows way more about Mars exploration than he used in his book. So how do you deal with that particular thing? Let's work off an example from the previous episodes. So young and mysterious orphan Alex, our hero, his teenage crush Brianna, the evil rising in the depths of the mountains in the kingdom of Ran, their home village is attacked, and let's say, for the purpose of this exercise, our heroes hide in an old abandoned mine nearby to save themselves. Now, I can probably think about something that has to do with mine based solely on my passive research from the past. So let's see, what do I know about abandoned mines? Well, they are underground, obviously. Usually there are some rails on the ground and a lot of pickaxes around. It's dark, wet, and based on my D&D experience, some sort of weaponized bat is going to get attracted to my torch. Okay, so I don't want them just sitting around in in mind. Let's try and come up with some sort of conflict and have them, you know, do something, maybe do a bit of character development that they can do in the mine. So let's see what my research about historical mining and abandoned mines can yield. Okay, I stopped recording for like an hour or so to do some research about the history of mining, metallurgy and some such. I actually found out where the first archaeological sites of the first metallurgical workshops were discovered. It was kind of surprising. Serbia. Who knew, right? Not a very useful information for me, per se, but still fun. I mean, it does kind of make sense, you know, many hills, mountains, a lot to mine. Most likely there is a rich folklore surrounding work like that. So considering this, old Serbian folklore, or rather, you know, ancestors of Serbia who lived in that location, might have folklore or mythology that is very rich on underground or mining, you know, demons and beings and little folktales. So, not very interesting, but I make a note for later about that. But right now, in my scene, I have two teenagers hiding in a mine, avoiding a life or death situation. So, they will probably not end up smelting iron. Okay, let's say maybe an animal attack. Well, it turns out not a lot of animals live in the old abandoned mines. They are artificial tunnels, you know, meaning not much of an ecosystem to take advantage of. Not established food chain, they might hide, you know, there occasionally, but mine is not really what animals are looking for. It's too big, too open, and too empty. So Alex and Brianna were not very likely to be attacked by a bear. So, okay, maybe, let's say, a collapse, a cave-in. Again, not very likely. These mines were actually made by very primitive techniques. There wasn't a lot of artificial reinforcements of the walls or ceiling. You know, they were pretty much dug the safest they could be. If there was an unstable tunnel, they just simply fill it in with rocks and go around. So no sudden collapse caused by, you know, our heroes just walking around would really be an issue. So, okay, let's try something next. So they could get lost in the mine. Sure, according to what I dug up, I'll let you enjoy this glorious pun and I let it settle in like a dust. Okay, so according to what I dug up about primitive mines, they were extremely hard to navigate. It was basically a huge web of tunnels with very poor lighting, and miners just sort of followed the clues in rock and worked by hand, meaning there was no way for them to tell their real depth or tell if they are not accidentally, you know, going up or down or dig in a curve. They could simply because the rock just gave way that way, you know, and easily end up just kind of spiraling towards the beginning of a tunnel. The tunnels were pretty narrow and small too. Makes sense when you dig by hand, you know. You can make it too small because you need to stand to achieve optimal stance for manual labor. But you are not going out of your way to dig a tunnel that is, you know, taller than you are. It means more work, more material you have to move out of the way before you can dig further. This looks actually promising. You know, tight, uneven tunnels. You can enter one and walk for hours and end up at the very same spot you entered the tunnel and not really realize it because you would, you know, find the exit that is on a ceiling, let's say. Also, no ambient soft light. Hard lights of a flame. And hard lights mean hard shadows. So you can easily miss an opening in a ground or a ceiling on a floor when you have uneven lighting, this sort of very black shadows. Awesome, I have my conflict. They'll get lost. And that might be actually pretty interesting. But there's one more thing in my research. Primitive minds were deep, like ridiculously so. The entrance shaft was usually pretty long. You could walk for like half an hour and not reach a single turn or a crossroad. Why? As the miners dug deeper, there would be a lot of useless rock which they need to move, and they need to move it out of the way. And it would make sense to fill in old empty shafts near the entrance, you know, effectively making the entrance shaft just a single narrow tunnel that leads to where you are currently digging. Meaning our heroes would would need to run for quite some time inside the mine itself for them to actually get to the point where they could get lost. So, according to my research, the most likely danger they could encounter in an old abandoned mine would be they ran in, they continued running, gradually losing daylight, not realizing they see less and less, and accidentally hitting their head on a low ceiling. Not very exciting conflict. But think about it for a little bit. My research actually eliminated the most cliche and overused scenario. The animal hiding in a mine, the cave-in, you know, them getting lost. All of this kind of cliche. All the while, it leaves me with one conflict. But if you think about it, running panicked through a narrow tunnel with uneven walls in a poor light is actually pretty dangerous, especially without any protective clothing or a helmet. You would smack yourself up pretty bad, likely end up with a number of bad scrapes and bruises. You could easily lose footing and end up with a break or even an open break or even a fractured skull. Pretty much a death sentence in those times of medicine. Now, I can probably work with that. So, let's say after the village attack, it might be an interesting twist, you know, present your heroes in a very down-to-earth kind of danger. It can give your text a very grounded feel and your readers a very powerful reality check. It is not just dragons and goblins our readers need to worry about now. My heroes are actually vulnerable humans. Or they might not be. Maybe Brianna ends up all messed up with bruises and everything, and Alex does not have a single scratch. It reinforces the mystery around him, plus it is very subtle, easy to digest, and much more original than having Alex present a firebending ability with his eyes glowing red in a second chapter of my book because I need him to become a hero eventually. Would I think of this situation without doing the research? Not likely. I would probably aim for something more grandiose, you know, something more cliche, since all I know about mines is exactly the same as everyone else knows about mines. And that is what research is actually all about. It is not only answering questions that might arise from writing, it is expanding your thinking and providing you with new options, something you would not think about otherwise. A good research is about expanding your creativity and discovering new, original ideas within your text. Thank you for listening.